Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for this weekend's edition. Also your host on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. On this weekend show, we're going to be focusing on markets and individual sectors, including the energy sector at the tail end of the show, to give hopefully a little bit of clarity to all of you listening in terms of where some of the shorter term and intermediate term moves could happen for a wide range of sectors. I know still a lot of comments on a recession and a number of people still looking for some sort of a bigger pullback, especially the commenters on our site. But I think we do need to understand where these markets are going more in the short term for all those looking to make money here and now. We're kicking off the show with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago, also editor of the Lyons Share Pro website, which I will link to in the weekend show posting. Dana, one of the big stories I think this week is the rise in yields, which correlates with a sell-off in bonds. You've been on this show with more of a long-term outlook saying you think that bull market for bonds is over. But now look at something like the 10-year holding above 4%, was very close to breaking to highs for over 52 weeks. Dana, your outlook for the bond market, do you think yields are going to keep moving higher from here?
Long term, thanks, Corey. Long term, yes. Like we've talked in the past, we think that 54 to 60-year bond interest rate cycle has bottomed, did bottom in 2020, the COVID bottom. So I think we go up for many years, if not decades to come. However, nothing's a straight line. So I think as we consolidate, basically we've consolidated for the last 10 months or so, I'm not sure that we're done either testing the downside or at least trading in the in this type of a range. So we could test the bottom of the range that we've been in over the last year, you know, in the mid threes, or even drop down even to a new low for the move before the next cycle low is in place and we start heading up in more earnest. So would not be surprised again to see it chop around, maybe move lower in yields a little bit before heading up much, much higher again over the next several years or several decades even.
When you say you could see rates heading higher, do you have any levels in mind as far as how high they could go? Because for some people, rates are already much higher than they're used to historically. Are there any kind of intermediate term or longer term targets you have for yields?
Well, you know, considering we topped out around, 16% in the early 80s, maybe we go, who's to say we don't go back up into the teens, you know, in the long run. Like I said, we're going to stair step our way there. It's not going to be a straight line. So 4% is just over 4% where we topped out last year, and where we're trading around now was our first target. So not surprising, we're seeing a bit of a consolidation there. I would say after the next cycle low, probably the next target to look for on the upside would be up above 6%.
So Dana, do higher yields, or I guess the sell-off in bonds, does this tell you anything about the sentiment that investors are taking towards these markets, potentially getting simply more bullish, looking for that growth, looking for the more appreciation in stocks over the safer bond play?
Yeah, that might be part of it, because stocks have been holding up pretty well despite interest rates holding up at a higher level. So maybe they're kind of getting more comfortable or more accustomed to a higher level of interest rates, which on the one hand is good because they need to get more comfortable with the higher rates and even going higher, like I mentioned. On the other hand, in the immediate term, obviously spikes in interest rates tighten up the liquidity and make things a little bit tougher for the other risk assets to move up. So we don't want to see them spike up too quickly, holding up at a higher level while we kind of get used to those the new normal, if you will, with higher rates. We're not going to be at zero forever. So I think one thing maybe the Fed has done well is kind of get investors accustomed to the new type of environment where rates will be up and probably go up higher. It doesn't mean you have to dump all of your other risk assets. There will be junctures, periods in there where other risk assets like stocks can do fine, even though rates aren't, you know, at zero or significantly low levels like they were for, you know, the better part of a decade. So I think on the one hand, again, it's good that investors are getting used to that. On the other hand, when we're in those periods of spiking interest rates, that's typically not a healthy period for the rest of the financial asset world.
Well, Dana, when you look at what's happening in the bond market and in the interest rate and the yield market, it seems to be sometimes at odds with what's happening in the U.S. dollar. A lot of times they travel in tandem, but lately we've seen the dollar have a mini rally over the last, let's say, month or so, and then start giving some of that back again recently. When you look at the U.S. dollar, just technically, how do you see it set up?
Yeah, technically, you know, we did see that breakdown after moving sideways roughly for the first 6 months of the year, did have a nice breakdown below those support levels that we saw for 6 months. Did not lead to a crash lower. In fact, we've bounced back over the last, call it 3-4 weeks or so. But right now, getting into kind of closing that gap from where we dropped in early July and those support levels that were in place. So bouncing back into that gap and into that breakdown level, which for us would be a selling point or shorting spot to short. So we have been shorting into this bounce up into that broken support. So I would expect, at least if the classical technical analysis holds here, that we do at least fail on that first attempt back at that broken support and get another sell off in the U.S. dollar, at least test those prior lows or even make a new low below those July lows, which certainly would be a boon for many of the other anti-dollar assets like commodities and other currencies and cryptos even.
Dan, any time frame that you have on how long this dollar can be in this general downtrend? Because the dollar bottomed right at the start of 2021, ran up for 18 to about 20 months, and then has turned around, and it's pretty obvious. Lower lows, lower highs, slicing through some key levels. How long could this downtrend last for?
Can't tell you. I would say, looking at the initial part of the downtrend that started, you know, last fall, had a about a 4 month wave lower. If we look from where the recent down move started in May, looking for another 4 month down move or so, maybe we're looking at another couple of months of dollar weakness if we do sell off from here, which we are looking for. So I would say into that maybe into that fall, into the September, October, fall period.
Well, and Dana, I know that you usually like to look at one asset class in isolation, but with the dollar index, it's really a counterbalance to a U.S. policy and the economic outlook. But the other group would say it's, you know, it's literally weighted against six other currencies in the Dixie basket. So when you're looking at it, you know, the euro plays a huge part, as does the yen and the pound. Then there are three other currencies that play a lesser role. Do you look at other currencies when you're looking at the dollar just to see how they may gain or lose traction versus the dollar? Or do you just strictly look at the dollar in isolation when you're doing your analysis?
We like to look at each, you know, judge each market on its own merits. But obviously, by definition, the Dixie is weighted, obviously, most heavily against the euro. So we would, while we're shorting the dollar now, we are also buying the euro via the FXE ETF. So we would expect to see a nice bounce in the euro, maybe up towards that 105, 105 and a half level next. Should be a decent little, maybe a 5-point bounce here in the euro. But obviously, if the dollar fails at resistance here, that would be a boon for the euro. We are not playing any other currencies right now. Those are the two clearest for us. So like you mentioned, we like to judge each market on its own merits, and those are the two opportunities right now.
All right, Daniel, let's carry this over then. Weak dollar, let's first start talking about the oil market, energy, because oil has run significantly higher. It reached up right to the top of its trading range, and it's still, at least right now, holding above that $80 a barrel level. Do you see oil breaking out to the upside?
Oil's kind of in a range for us, like you mentioned. I don't see a ton of opportunity right now. Certainly, it could go, it could do whatever it wants to do. But right now, we've got no position or other energy assets. It's more or less range bound. We like to pick out the skewed risk reward opportunities, and for us, we don't see that right now in the oil market.
Well, when you look at the commodity sector overall, are there any areas that are grabbing your attention? And some previous calls, we had talked about what you were looking at in the grains, and I think we also looked at copper. Just curious, any other commodities ringing your bell?
Yeah, certainly precious metals we continue to like in the longer term. Obviously, gold and silver pulled back a little bit here, but gold could go a little bit lower. We still like them in the longer term, though. I think we're still... especially in the gold market, we've got we're in the throes of a longer term bull market. So we've consolidated for a couple of years. I think we are getting close to ready for another big up leg in that bull market. But like you mentioned, grains are at a juncture right now and testing those the recent lows and the support levels we've been looking at, where we have been accumulating a position in that market as well. So, yeah, we are looking for potential major low type of a juncture here in the grain market. So that's another area of consideration that we've been focused on right now. Like I mentioned, looking for those big, like, skewed risk reward opportunities. I think the grains offer one of those types of opportunities right here.
When you say you're looking at the grains, are there any in specific that you're looking at, and any ETFs that I know you normally trade ETFs, any ETFs that follow the particular grains you're watching?
Yeah, it's more the general grain market. We've seen explosive moves depending on the day in the corn and wheat markets. Obviously, they have their various factors that play into the individual markets a little bit different. But the overall grain market, a basket of grains, is something we're most comfortable in. So something like DBA would be an exchange traded fund that we like right here. We've also got an allocation to corn. CORN would be the ticker symbol there in the exchange traded product as well. So I would say generally grains, especially with the, like I mentioned, the various factors within each particular grain market could be quite volatile. So a basket would be good. Or if you're going to go individual, I would take a stab at a handful of the different grain markets. But if you want to go just general, DBA would be one exchange traded fund that we like here.
So Dana, on the precious metals front, since you are bullish still longer term for precious metals, especially gold, what about some of the ETFs that follow the stocks, like GDX or even SIL for the silver stocks? Are you seeing any difference there, any correlation between the precious metals?
Yeah, obviously there's always going to be correlation between the miners and the metals themselves. Obviously, the miners are equities at the end of the day. So whatever's happening in the equity market, there's going to be a pull on the miners from that direction as well. So you got to kind of treat them as semi-equities, semi-precious metals. So right now, they've pulled back a little bit with the metals themselves, and also with a little bit of the bump in the road that we've seen in the equity market. So if we continue to see equities consolidate or pull back from the recent extended run that they were on, certainly that could weigh a little bit on the miners, which would not shock us. But we are back down towards levels that we would like to see hold in something like GDX or SIL, SILJ. So we do have long positions on in those. We think eventually stocks do right themselves again and start moving higher again. And like I mentioned, I think gold eventually puts in another major up leg in the bull market. So Both of those factors should be good positive influences on those miners.
Well, Dana, just one other commodity that is kind of the driver of the bus for base metals, and that's Dr. Copper. A lot of people intuit that copper is a good economic indicator. I know you kind of block all that out and just look at the asset itself. But when you look at copper, it seems like it's stuck in a range and has been most of this year. We get a lot of bullish commentary on our show, and we see a lot of bullish commentary in the marketplace about the need for copper, but the price action doesn't seem to be doing much. And when you look at COPX, which I know you also track, the copper producers and the larger copper companies, it seems like it's kind of been stuck in a range all year too. Any thoughts on copper or COPEX?
Yeah, so generally we're bullish on commodities in the longer term. That would include copper, which has kind of, like you said, been trading in a range, hasn't offered a whole lot for buy and holders of late. You kind of had to manage your allocations within the range. But generally speaking, once we do think there's going to be upside resolution to both copper and copper miners. So I think you can hold an allocation to it once things get a little bit more technically constructed. But right now, like you said, it's kind of been sideways, fits and starts within those markets. But yes, eventually we do think there's upside resolution there.
Dana, when you look at something like a longer-term copper chart, and to Shad's point, there is a lot of bullish narrative out there when it comes to some of the fundamentals. This $4 price range for copper, historically it is a high level, and it has been right around this $4 range now for well over a year, a couple of years, actually. Is that more encouraging to you on that longer term sense where, yeah, it might not be breaking out, but historically, this is still a strong price for copper and it's consolidated around here for years?
Yeah, certainly. I would say maybe less so than gold, but certainly it's consolidated those gains that we saw before. So did get a bit extended, certainly after the big run up, like in gold, certainly up into the highs a couple of years ago, but same thing with copper. You know, that run that we had off of the COVID bottom has held up reasonably well. More of a trading range, I would say, than gold. I would be a little bit more bullish on gold and the long term prospects there. But copper's held up fine. It hasn't really fallen out of bed or anything like that. So am I as excited about copper as I am gold? No, but at the same time, there should be similar, but not the same upside pressures on both of those metals. Again, more so on gold than copper, I would say, but copper should at least go along for the ride a little bit.
Well, Dana, as far as the dollar, you know, a lot of people look at gold and other things as a counterbalance, but the other market that really plays, and same thing with the bonds, is the crypto market. And you had mentioned in the onset that anti-dollar trades may get a boost if the dollar pulls back. Is that how you're looking at the cryptos, specifically Bitcoin and Ethereum?
Yeah, definitely. The cryptos did have a bit of a bullish breakout a couple months ago. Have not done much since, but at the same time, haven't lost anything. So holding support reasonably well, especially over the last couple of weeks as the dollar has bounced sharply. You've seen Bitcoin, both Bitcoin and Ethereum, kind of hold their own or hang in there at least. So we haven't seen any type of a rush out of there. So I would say that's generally constructive or bullish. So the fact that they've held up reasonably well in the face of that dollar bounces probably bodes well. So we do have a long position on both Bitcoin and Ethereum versus via the exchange traded products. So I would say if they can hold these support areas that they've been holding so far over the last couple months, I would see upside in Bitcoin up towards that call it 36,000 level potentially, and then in Ethereum we'd be eyeing maybe that 2400 level as that next upside target, again, as long as we do hold support levels in here.
All right, Dana, let's quickly move over to U.S. markets then. After the Dow, it was, I believe, tail end of last week or early this week, ended a historic run where the Dow was up 12 or 13 days in a row. It was the third longest run in history. We have heard that, look, a lot of this market move has been carried by the big tech stocks, that Magnificent Seven. But we've also been hearing that their breadth is widening. Money is starting to spread out a little bit more. What camp are you in here? Where do you see markets going, and how important will these Magnificent Seven be to the next move?
Sure. I mean, if you're looking at the seven, you have to pretty much, like we discussed before, you have to look at each market on its own merit. So I wouldn't necessarily judge the prospects of the U.S. equity market based on seven stocks. You know, obviously, if there's going to be a durable, more sustainable rally, it's got to be more than just those few stocks. And the positive thing is that's really since the start of June, we've seen an expansion in breadth, an expansion in the broad averages. And those, the breadth indicators that we track, that we, especially some of the proprietary ones that we developed, they've been holding up very well over the last, you know, the last couple months, but even over the last few weeks as some of the stock rallies have stalled. So right now, those are all still constructive, still buoyant, still positive. And that indicates to us that any pullback that we get here, which is not unexpected, given, as you mentioned, the run that stocks went on, and especially given the extended sentiment readings that we were seeing over the last month or so, not surprising to see a pullback. But at the same time, given the makeup of the recent broader expansion in participation in the rally, I would say we're still in a constructive position, meaning any pullback, any pause here is probably a buying opportunity. We probably do make another run to the upside eventually once this consolidation is through.
Well, Danny, when you say that each of these pullbacks could be buying opportunities, are you more in the camp that this is kind of a new bull market leg underway, or is it just that in the short term you'd be bullish on any pullbacks? The reason I ask is a lot of the narrative out there in the marketplace is that we're in a new bull market. It sounds like in your models you're still waiting to see if that's the case or not.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it a new bull market. You look at the broader averages, like you mentioned, it's a matter of duration. So in the shorter term, short to intermediate term, yes, the breadth measures, the expansion that we've seen is constructive, but that's that. I would not extrapolate that beyond the intermediate term. So it's still tradable. It's still buyable right here. I don't necessarily extrapolate that to mean we're going to new highs and all the broad market averages. Certainly, the S&P and some of the larger cap averages are within, you know, shouting distance of all-time highs. Would not be surprising to see those go to all-time highs. But some of the broader averages, although they are acting well, still well below all-time highs. And if you started the bear market at those prior peaks at the end of 2021 in those broad averages, I would say there's nothing telling us that we have emerged out of that bear market in the broader averages. Yes, even though, you know, some of those narrow cap weighted large cap averages could go to new all-time highs, which in fact we would bet they will. But at the same time, like I said, doesn't mean the broad market in general, which is more important in our eyes, has emerged from the bear market and is in a new bull market, like you said, because there's so many longer term background type of indicators, type of data that is still extremely excessive, has gotten nowhere near levels where it needs to get worked off in order to put us into a new in position to start a new bull market. So short to intermediate term, still constructive. Longer term, there's still a lot of work to be done, and still jury is out for us in terms of starting any new bull market. So we would be betting against it still.
Okay. Hey, that says a lot there, Dana. Thank you very much for your time sharing with us your trading strategy. You've been playing these markets very well on the way down and on the way up. I do appreciate all of your time sharing your thoughts with our listeners. And again, everybody, go check out Dana's website, The Lion Share Pro, which I will link to in the weekend show posting. Dana, thank you very much for your time this weekend. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
You got it. Thanks again, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.